Hey!
Hi, this is Dr. Christine.
And Dr. Colin.
And we are your co-hosts for the exciting new podcast called
Love, Scrubs, and Stories,
where we dive deep into the world of dating and relationships and go beyond the people wearing the white coats, the scrubs, and the stethoscopes.
Come join us on this journey where we engage in dialogue and share stories of love, heartbreak, resilience, and triumphs. And we also navigate our professional lives with our hearts on our sleeves.
Please remember to subscribe and hit the notification button to stay up to date on all future episodes.
And we look forward to seeing you inside. Hello.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Love, Scrubs, and Stories podcast, where we talk about all things dating and relationships from the perspective of healthcare professionals. I'm your co-host, Dr. Christine Nguyen, and I'm joined by my amazing, amazing co-host, Dr. Colin Zhu. Colin, how are we doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Today is a beautiful day. You and I are both in sunny California. We've had some crazy weather the last couple months, but we are super, super excited about today's topic and our featured guest expert for today. So, Christine, I know this is something that we talk about in the men's locker room, you know, as a hyperbole, but a lot of times it's very difficult to bring up uncomfortable conversations, but those conversations are necessary in order to further the growth, no pun intended, in terms of dating and relationships, specifically around men's health and sexual health. And a topic that really comes up a lot is ED, erectile dysfunction, and all the things related and proximal to that, right? So I know from the guy's perspective, you know, a man to man, it's not that easy to come up. And it's even harder to talk about it from a professional perspective. So, Christine, from a female's perspective, I'm really, really curious to know is that from your female colleagues, from your girlfriends, when you know that a male partner is having difficulty with something that they know is maybe a dysfunction sexually or performance issues, is it very hard to, this is very hard to not have puns. I'm just thinking about this. I'm like, okay, avoid all puns. How difficult is it for that couple, either that's dating or in a committed relationship, to talk about it? Does it ever get talked about? And how do we navigate it? How do your girlfriends and female colleagues bring this issue to the forefront?
Always well stated and with the best questions. But first of all, I'm excited, right? Again, it's really hard to avoid certain words, but I really am excited that we are talking about this topic because, you know, sexual health specifically, you know, for today's topic, men's sexual health is an area that we often, you know, feel very uncomfortable, you know, talking about it. But it's so important, and especially among my girlfriends and I, and even, you know, with partners, right? As it comes up, and which it has for me in the past, there was an incident. And to be honest, like, I did not know how to address it. I did not know what the right words to use were. And I don't even know if, you know, what it would be. But we do, you know, among my girlfriends, we do talk about this. And we always, I feel like, kind of dance around it. And it's like, you know, how do you bring it up? How do you address it? You know, it's easier, right? You know, girlfriend to girlfriend to say about it, you know, to talk about it. But in a relationship, you know, how do I talk about it and make it a safe space for my partner to be able to, you know, create a space where he can openly like discuss, you know, his feelings about it. And we can together, you know, as partners, how to navigate this. It's a very delicate situation. I don't have the right answers.
So let's just say we have the ideal way to bring it up into conversation. Is it important to talk about in order to further the bond between the relationship?
Absolutely. Because, you know, intimacy is such a huge part of relationships, right? In forming, you know, growing those connections. And I think if we avoid it, just like with all things in relationships, and this is such a big part of it, that it's just going to create a further wedge. And also just leads to all sorts of assumptions, right? We have no idea what our partner's thinking. We have no idea what it is that our partner needs or what the right approach is. If there is, you know, I doubt that there's maybe one right approach, but perhaps there are better approaches, better ways of approaching these topics. And so I would love for our guests to provide us some guidance on how we go about, you know, perhaps their best practices on how to guide, you know, maneuver these aspects of the relationship. Aside from, you know, overall interest, right? We've actually had quite a huge demand on talking about men's sexual health and, you know, get a lot of questions about, here's the reality, right? We all talk about it more or less, probably maybe not openly, but, you know, we hear people at least make jokes about, right, size and, you know, health and function and, you know, all the things that surrounds, you know, men's sexual health. And so,
yeah, you know, from the popular media point of view, it's way more talked about. And it's, you know, from a guy's point of view, you have the embarrassment. If they feel really down about it, they have, then Absolutely. It contributes to self-worth, self-esteem, mm-hmm. right? And some guys may not even have a male role model to go to. Maybe they grew up without a father, they didn't grow up with an older brother, and they end up talking to their friends about it. So in a way, it seems like we just kind of dance around the topic a lot without actually fully addressing it. And you know, and then a lot of in my work as a primary care physician and having done a lot of urgent care related matters, a lot of people don't really go to their primary care physician, right? So when you end up not going to your main doctor, then a lot of issues don't get brought about, right? And then from there, having the option or the opportunity to be referred to, for example, a sexual health specialist or urologist to even go a little bit more specific in terms of these types of issues. So I think in general, it's important to give space. It's important to accommodate, to not judge, and to just bring the conversation up, even if you don't have a real solution for it. I think it's important to actually just bring it up into conversation without feeling judged. I think from my perspective, from a male perspective, that's the very first step. So, and when that happens, then we feel safer to talk about with our female partners. And I'm sure our female partners would appreciate that to further the bond. I wanted to say further the growth, but you know, we're going to learn, go into
it. We're going to, that's going to be the entire episode. There'll be puns, but thank you, Colin, for sharing your thoughts on this. And I think it's, you know, obviously it's so important. And also even as like healthcare professionals, like I do hear like some hesitation in seeking help, like professional expert help, you know, when these, you know, issues arise. And we should be able to like have these dialogue and make it something that we should all be comfortable talking about and support and encourage one another, you know, should we need the help.
Yeah. Yeah. So why don't we introduce our next guest? You ready for them?
Yes. I can't wait.
So we have Dr. Aaron Spitz. He earned his medical degree from Cornell Medical College and completed his residency at University of Southern California, where he furthered and obtained his fellowship training in infertility at Baylor College of Medicine. Dr. Spitz has clinical and policy expertise in telehealth, and he specializes in male infertility and sexual dysfunction, also engaging in clinical trials and research. He's the immediate past chair of the American Urology Association Urology Telehealth Task Force and serves on many, many different types of work groups. He's also served as the president of California Urologic Association, and he is the author of the penis book, A Doctor's Complete Guide to the Penis from Size to Function and Everything in Between, and has been published in 6 languages. And he's also been a guest on Dr. Phil, Real Housewives of Orange County, and has appeared and guest host on CBS The Doctors. And also, I'm quite proud of the fact that he's been featured in the documentary, The Game Changers, and also You Are What You Eat. So without further ado, please welcome Dr. Aaron Spitz. Hello.
Hello. Hi, Dr. Spitz. Hi. Welcome to the Love, Scrubs, and Stories podcast.
Dr. Christine. Nice to be here with you both. Thank you.
Yeah, this is truly an honor. And, you know, we spoke briefly before we started podcast recording. And, you know, I mentioned how, like, I've, you know, have referred patients to you. And it's just, you know, this is like truly an honor to finally have you come join us on the podcast through a mutual friend connection. So thank you so much for making the time.
Yeah, no, it's a great opportunity to share some information that hopefully will be helpful.
Yes, yes. So let's get straight to it. So being that you are a top expert in men's sexual health, including erectile dysfunction, let's start from the basics for everyone. And what are the top organic slash non-organic causes that men can easily address on their own? Has there been any updates over time? And from your clinical experience, how would you answer that?
Right. Well, let me begin my answer with just a very basic review of the anatomy of how a penis functions. And from that, it becomes easier to understand what causes problems and why, and start to look at the proper solutions. So the penis is comprised of two cylinders, sort of side by side, like my two fingers, that fill up with blood that is what causes the erection. And then there's a third channel underneath, which is the urethra. Now, these two cylinders go back into the body just as far as they come out of the body. So when you look down, you're seeing about half the length of the structure of the penis. These cylinders are lined with tissue, like the skin on my fingers, with a tissue that is very strong but flexible, and it expands, it lengthens, and it widens as it fills up with blood. And within the chambers is a meshwork of what looks like a sponge, and it's vascular tissue, but rather than a bunch of little blood vessels like capillaries, it's really like a mesh network. And all of those spaces are lined with muscle, smooth muscle, that can relax or contract. There's arteries that come into the base of the cylinders, and then the blood fills up those spongy spaces. And depending on whether those spongy spaces are relaxing or not, it allows more and more blood to fill in. At some point, no more blood can fill and it can't expand anymore. So instead of getting bigger, the penis then starts getting harder. And when it gets as full as it can be, that high pressure inside the penis pinches off the veins that drain the blood back out of the penis. So when an erection is achieved, it's because blood's flowing into the penis, the spongy spaces are relaxing and allowing more and more in until it's maximally full, maximal pressure, and then that pressure is pinching off the veins and the blood is trapped in there. There are nerve signals that are releasing nitric oxide within the spongy spaces, and those nerves are coming ultimately from the spine, and they are controlled by reflexes, but also from signals in the brain. And there's hormones, principally testosterone, which keeps the spongy spaces within those chambers healthy and able to be supple and expand. So you have to have healthy hormonal balance, healthy neurological system, as well as a healthy vascular system to have a normal, healthy erection. And so the top causes for erectile dysfunction can be something wrong with any of those systems. Mm. The most common cause of erectile dysfunction in men 40 and over is going to be age-related changes of the blood vessels, which are going to cause some degree of narrowing of the arteries that are bringing the blood into the penis, but even more importantly, some degree of fibrosis and lack of elasticity so that those spongy spaces cannot relax and open up as much as they need to. That's even more critical than just narrowing of the penile arteries. High blood pressure will aggravate that problem. Mm-hmm. So does hypercholesterolemia, not so much within the spongy spaces, but the blood vessels leading to them, the penile arteries, because the penile arteries are some of the smaller arteries in our body, even at their best. So if we have vascular disease that's narrowing our arteries, they're going to be amongst the first to go. Smoking is going to harden and narrow those arteries as well. Diabetes is going to undermine the health of the spongy spaces in the penis as well as the blood vessels with that endothelial dysfunction that you get. And then metabolic syndrome, you know, putting it all together. So most common causes of erectile dysfunction are all those situations that I just listed. And that's on the vascular side. Then there's hormonal. It's very common for men over 40 to have low testosterone and not realize it. And that low testosterone not only undermines the desire for sex, but it actually undermines the ability of the penis as an organ to function properly. And then there can be neurological issues at play. Neurological disease is going to be far less common than vascular disease or hormonal imbalance. But the nervous system in and of itself plays a key role in normal sexual function. And younger men who are otherwise healthy, their most common cause of erectile dysfunction is performance anxiety. And this is due to the way the nerves stimulate the penis. So we have a sympathetic nervous system, which is our fight or flight system. It keeps us safe, helps us survive danger and trauma, helps us make decisions quickly. And then we have our parasympathetic nervous system, which is more of the subconscious system. It's the relaxation system. It's the system that allows us to digest food. It's the system that modulates our immune system to some degree, and also is important in our vascular tone. But there's a balance between the parasympathetic and the sympathetic system. That's how we're able to be alive. What happens with performance anxiety is that there's an imbalance. So when you are having an erection, what's happening is that that parasympathetic nervous system is firing off onto the penis, and it's the parasympathetic nerve terminals that are causing the release of nitric oxide into the vascular spaces. And nitric oxide is a very potent stimulator of blood flow, a relaxer of the vascular wall, and causes everything to open up and blood to flow in. But it's all coming from the parasympathetic nerves. Performance anxiety is basically a trigger that releases adrenaline, and adrenaline stimulates the sympathetic nervous system and causes the sympathetic nerves that are also in the penis to fire off. And as well as the adrenaline itself floating through the bloodstream, and that triggers the constriction of the muscles of all those vascular spaces inside the penis chambers, as well as a constriction of the penile arteries themselves. So adrenaline causes the blood flow to slow down to the penis, and rather blood is rerouted to the heart, lungs, brain, and liver. When we have a fight or flight response, the blood is shunted from our less important parts like our extremities and our penis to our core and to our brain to survive some sort of physical attack. If our arm gets severed, we're not going to bleed to death because the blood shunted centrally. But we release adrenaline not just because of physical threats, but because of modern problems that have nothing to do with our physical safety. And anxieties that we may have over non-physically threatening situations still cause us to release adrenaline. Mm. And performance anxiety can be very simple and very insidious. And in most cases, it's as simple as the thought, gosh, I wonder if I'm going to have trouble keeping my erection. And the guy might have that thought because he had trouble another time. Maybe he was under the weather. Maybe he was hungover. Maybe he had a flu. Or he was, you know, something was going on that knocked out his erection, whereas normally he doesn't have any problem. And that thing that happened freaked him out. And now he carries it in his mind. So the next time he goes to have sex, he has this thought, I wonder if that's going to happen again. Mm-hmm. And just that thought causes him to release adrenaline. And it may be enough adrenaline to prevent him from getting the erection or keeping the erection. Because maybe he gets his erection and he's having sexual relations. And during sex, he wonders, I wonder if I'm going to be able to keep this erection.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
Or there's a shift in the sexual position, or somebody coughs, or, you know, there's some distraction. And then you start to wonder, am I going to keep my erection? And you release adrenaline. And then all of a sudden, you don't keep your erection. And now, the next time he goes to have sex, he's got this reinforcement and he goes, I wonder if I'm going to have trouble keeping my erection like the last two times. And now it's an even bigger adrenaline release. And you can see it starts to snowball. And performance anxiety is as simple as that. It doesn't have to be some complex Freudian psychological, contortion around your childhood or, some PTSD moment in your life. It can just be simply that simple. And the problem is that it's very hard to tell yourself, don't think that. The more you tell yourself not to think that, the more you think it.
All right. The more you focus on it, that's where your energy is.
And it can be a very hard thing to escape from. But for many men, they don't realize that that's what the problem was. And just learning that and recognizing that for many men actually helps a lot. Because for many men for whom performance anxiety is the cause, they're quite certain it must be something physical. Something must be wrong. And that's scary. And what is it? And just this understanding takes a lot of the stress away. And in some cases, just knowing that allows them to escape it, but not for everybody. And so for many men, a behavioral therapist really is very helpful in unwinding that. But even so, you can also get past performance anxiety with prescription medications like sildenafil and tadalafil, because those medications are revving up the nitric oxide effect in the vascular spaces of the penis, which is allowing the blood vessels to open up, and they're counteracting the sympathetic effect of the adrenaline, squeezing them. And in most cases, the pills win. And there's a stronger opening of the blood vessels than there is a closing of the blood vessels. And for many men, using these pills for some period of time gives them a positive reinforcement that melts that snowball and lets them fly free without the pills eventually, kind of back to their own self, because that PTSD moment of, oh boy, here we are, here we go again, oh no, it's crashing, becomes more of a distant memory. So prescription medications can work hand in hand with behavioral therapy to treat performance anxiety, which is not a physical problem with the penis, but it is truly a biochemical process that happens there.
The Loves, Girls, and Stories podcast is a collaboration and co-production between The Chef Doc and White Coat Romance.
The Chef Doc is a wellness platform that offers innovative approaches to thriving and offers a self-empowerment book, podcast series, on-demand masterclass series, as well as a brand new app. The app provides self-guided education such as food as medicine, self-care, and resilience. Coaching services are also available, whether you prefer one-on-one or group-type settings. Please go now to your app store, as well as Apple as Google Play, to download for free.
White Coat Romance is a dating app for healthcare and health-related professionals and students in the U.S. and Canada. It's a lively space where you can find love, companionship, and build meaningful connections with like-minded professionals. If you're single, go to the App Store and Google Play to download and join our vibrant community.
We are deeply grateful for your support. From all of us here at Love Scrubs and Stories Podcast, thank you so much for choosing us.
And enjoy the rest of this episode.
Yeah. So over your clinical practice and, you know, from your documentary and from your book, you do talk a lot about diet and lifestyle. And, you know, you just eloquently put that together in terms of organic and non-organic causes. Over time, with the rise of the different types of processed foods that contributes, and, you know, the SAD diet, the standard American diet, in terms of heavily, you know, animal-based products, and also the process and refinement of our foods, and then the chronic stress that has increased over time, and that could be from many, many different causes. How do you take it in terms of an individualized approach for your patients, and or do you strike a balance in terms of, hey, you know, we need to examine what goes into your system. We need to examine, you know, what kind of stressors and, you know, triggers that trigger you, you know, psychologically. And then you say to yourself, okay, you know, let's use medication only, you know, when really necessary. How do you strike that balance?
Yeah. I try to take a very simplified approach. It is the case that organic erectile dysfunction, disease of those blood vessels, fibrosis of those blood vessels, narrowing of those arteries, lowered testosterone levels, anxiety affecting the nervous system, can all be improved and in some cases even reversed with lifestyle changes, including diet, exercise, meditation. However, that takes some time. And my patients need help, not just over time in a sustainable way, but also in the short term. And because the prescription medications, sildenafil, sildenafil, are very safe, so safe that I would contend that they could be over-the-counter medications. There's really not a good reason to make my patients wait until they have reversed the disease state in their body with diet and exercise and stress remediation techniques, which is going to take some amount of time, and not everybody will do it. And their relationship is suffering and their self-esteem is suffering. And so I offer them an immediate solution as a bridge or in combination with a sustainable long-term plan. But I also recognize that I'm seeing men at all different stages of their health and of their life cycle and their deterioration. We all deteriorate. There are many men for whom lifestyle changes will be incompletely effective, and they will still need prescription medication. So I don't view the prescribing or the taking of prescription medications for erectile dysfunction as a failure, but rather as a bridge, and sometimes, in many cases, as a long-term necessity. As far as how I counsel the patients about reversing and improving their underlying sexual physiological health, again, I try to keep that very simple as well. I believe that the science really demonstrates that a plant-based diet is better for the health of our blood vessels, of our vasculature, as well as specifically our erections, than an omnivore diet is. I've been challenged recently by people regarding a carnivore diet. The fact is, there just isn't data on carnivore diets because it's an unusual diet. And either no one has bothered to do the science or there's not enough data yet, but I haven't seen any publications on true carnivore diets and how they stack up with blood vessel health over the long term. But there is a lot of data on plant-based diets and how they stack up against omnivore diets in the short term and the long term. And the science really demonstrates that they promote more nitric oxide and better flow and less atherosclerotic disease and better erections. Now, there's a lot of different kinds of plants out there. And I don't get into this is the menu of vegetables and fruits that you need to eat, and this is how many of this, and this is how much of that, because there's, you know, this phytonutrient in this, and there's that mineral in that. I would imagine
you talk about foods that are rich in nitrates, right? Because you do talk a lot about the vasodilation once it's converted, you know, from nitrates to nitric oxide. Do you talk more about foods that are rich in nitrates?
Well, again, I keep it simple. Vegetables have more nitrates than animal products. And so that's really the starting point. I do point out that, you know, some are particularly rich in nitrates, like green leafy vegetables and beets and what have you. But there's thousands of phytonutrients, and nutritional science has just begun to scratch the surface on what they do and how they interplay with each other. And so I'm of the camp that it's best to get lots of different kinds of plants into you, because broccoli is good for you. Why? Well, because it's got a lot of broccoli in it. You know, spinach is good for you because it's got a lot of spinach in it. To start to break it down into what the particular phytonutrients or minerals or fatty acids are, et cetera, in a particular plant, that's good that people study that. And it is useful and important, but you can start to put a patient into overwhelm. And you can also start to get a patient confused. And the fact is that none of this nutritional science is truly worked out enough to make as authoritative statements as they often do. So I like to tell patients, eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, more vegetables than fruit, you know, if you're pre-diabetic or what have you. But eat a lot of fruits and vegetables and nuts, plant-based foods. Try to get different colors, have some raw, have some cooked, and try to avoid or minimize added sugar. And that's it. That's the recipe. And mm-hmm. that's something that people can understand.
Yeah, start with those basics.
I say, you know, you don't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be all or none. There's nothing magically poisonous about a forkful of steak. It's really about proportion. So to the extent that you can do this more and more and more, better and better and better. But if you don't do it all the way, it's still good. Also, people ask me about meat substitutes, soy chicken and Setian turkey and, you know, soy chorizo. I don't know how really good those ingredients are from a nutritional and health standpoint. I mean, there's certainly a benefit that you are dropping out the animal products by adding those to your meals. But it's not necessarily the case that those are in particular healthy for you to eat, as opposed to actual vegetables and fruits. And so
the actual food product.
Yeah, I counsel my patients to really try to eat whole foods, whole vegetables and fruits. And it takes about 3 months or so for the brain to get used to these different molecules circulating around, and the receptors don't feel sated, and it doesn't feel like you ate anything. Even if you ate 3 pounds of broccoli, you still feel like maybe you're hungry, even though your stomach's distended because of the receptors in your brain. But over a few months period of time, that'll switch over, and you'll eat a plate of broccoli and go, yeah, that was a good meal. I feel full. You have to give patients those expectations, you know, counsel them that this is what to expect. And it's not going to happen overnight. And again, to encourage people to just move in that direction. It doesn't have to be all or none. Because if you set the bar too high or you make it too complicated, people are not going to adhere.
So, hey guys, what's going on? I hope that you guys are enjoying this episode. We felt that this episode is so important, so much fun, so engaging that we decided to split it up into two parts. So be sure to check back to part two of this episode.
Yeah, and it's going to be really worth your while. So we encourage you to hop on over and check out the second half of this episode.
Hey guys, thank you so much for watching and listening to this channel. If you enjoyed this, please like, comment, and subscribe. And if you felt like this was a benefit for someone else, please let them know as well.
As a reminder, this channel does not offer medical advice. All opinions expressed are ours and our guests only. It is for general informational purposes only and does not replace professional healthcare services. Please consult your own healthcare provider for any medical issues you may have.
Until the next episode, whether you're in and out of your scrubs,
please remember to love yourself and others and lead with kindness.
Bye.